Hey, yo, welcome to the Sixers Talk Podcast. So glad you could join us here. Danny Pavels, along with Noah Levick, our NBC Sports Philadelphia.com writer extraordinaire, always on the beat doing his thing. And Ben Berry, our producer in the cut, making this all happen. So glad you could join us. The Sixers with another dub, still sitting in sixth place in the Eastern Conference, but 2.5 games above that play-in game. So the momentum is headed in the right direction. Two games out of first place where the Chicago Bulls are, Miami Heat are now in first place, knocking the Chicago Bulls down a notch. Noah, the Sixers get this W against a shorthanded Pelican squad. They were without three key players in Shake Milton, Danny Green, and Seth Curry, but we did see the return of Matisse Thybulle, which we'll get into. We'll get into these rumors with James Harden and what might happen with him and Brooklyn as it relates to the 76ers. But no better place to start than with Joel Embiid. Once again, a casual, it felt to me, performance for him where he just poured it in once again, joining a list of players like Karl Malone, Bob McAdoo, Wilt Chamberlain, Anthony Davis of guys who have scored 38 or more points, got 10 or more rebounds in four straight games. Taking it all in, Noah, once again, I think the casualness of his points, 18 in the first half, which didn't quite seem like it, that really struck me here in this game against the Pelicans, against a game opponent in Willie Hernan Gomez and New Orleans team.
Right. This brought back recent memories of Mo Bamba's career night. Willie Hernan Gomez, also not renowned as a three-point shooter, knocked one down in the first quarter and finished with a career best 29. So tip of the cap to him. But to me, what stands out from Joel Embiid's night is the comment before the game from Willie Green, the Pelicans' first-year head coach and former Sixer, who was asked just what are the keys to guarding Embiid, and he joked, don't let him catch the ball.
And excellent.
Obviously, a humorous comment and something with a lot of truth into it. Just outside of that, I'm not really sure there are any great answers these days to even containing Embiid. 38 plus in four straight games is just very difficult to wrap your head around. And to be honest, his first half was subpar by his very high standards. Doc Rivers even noted post-game that at halftime, Embiid put his hand up in the locker room and said, look, I need to be better defensively. And, of course, he set the tone in the third quarter, led the Sixers charge, and allowed them to rush aside what was a pretty poor first half across the board and carried them to this victory, along with Tobias Harris, who gave the Sixers a 33 points and 11 boards last night, which was an excellent contribution on his part and important because the Sixers outside of those two were missing a lot of shots and the half-court offense was tentative and it just was difficult to see how the team was going to score when those two were not on the floor. But anything related to Joel Embiid, you felt pretty confident. And I'm sure if you're Willie Green, you didn't feel so great when Embiid had the ball in his hands.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
12 of 24 from the floor, 18 of 20 from the free throw line, and didn't hit a three-pointer So that might have pushed him, you know, over the 40-point mark had one of those fallen. You know, it's interesting because I kind of harped on the point that he took 32 shots and was 16 of 32 in the Sixers' last game. Yet here he is with the efficiency and the trips to the line, 12 of 24, 18 of 20, as I mentioned. And it's just a pleasure to see him go about his business and the way he thinks the game, as we alluded to and talked about last time with him putting, you know, Furkan Korkmaz on his side. So he would be the release valve for him on if the double team came, or he was able to make that pass to Furkan to the corner that we talked about in the last podcast. You know, you bring in Tobias Harris into the conversation, and just really the type of game you want to see him play as Embiid's Robin to his Batman. And, you know, when they play games like, you know, it's a shame that it has to be in a game where the Pelicans didn't have Brandon Ingram and Josh Hart and Devontae Graham and Jonas Valanciunas. But, you know, you'll take it as far as it goes with the momentum of this team and how they're developing and growing, because we'll talk about Tobias's numbers in a moment, but I really think that your point about Embiid pointing the finger at himself at halftime and saying, I have to do better, and actually going out and doing it, just the leadership that and the growth that we've seen from him, particularly when he's, you know, trying to lead by example and by his words. So he walks it like he talks it. He's out there, you know, demonstrating the way to get it done. And on top of that, he's egging the crowd on a little bit, like, this is what you wanted to come see type of thing, which you talked about in your three observations, Noah. So here, you know, starting a five-game homestand the right way, I would implore people to get down to the arena and enjoy some of this, because, you know, he's continually in conversations with Wilt Chamberlain. Like, this isn't a normal thing for people to be witnessing. So I just encourage people, if this turns out to be his MVP season, come down here and get to enjoy some of this in person.
Absolutely. I figure the game Thursday night against the Lakers will be a little more packed, a little more of a circus atmosphere.
Anthony Davis returns.
Anthony Davis is back, and the Lakers beat the Nets, I believe, last night. Yep. But last night's Sixers game, there was a sleepy vibe overall to start, and Embiid was not exempt from that. And it wasn't a packed, raucous house, but I think once he got flowing and once the Sixers started making that third quarter push, a lot of energy back in that arena, and I think there was that collective recognition that we're lucky to watch this special talent who's playing his best basketball ever. So, yeah, this is an important stretch, as we've noted, for the Sixers, their longest homestand of the season. And it's big that they started it off with a win, because, in all honesty, this would have been a bad loss, and this was a New Orleans team without four usual starters. And that was giving heavy rotation minutes to rookies and players like Gary Clark, who was briefly a Sixer last year and just did not have the strongest roster. So big that the Sixers at least found a way to pull out the win and avoided one of these disheartening home losses that have been rather frequent, you know, in the first half of this season.
Yeah, just their 11th home win, Noah, and we can't get into all the fun stuff without talking about that, because they were down 8 at halftime. They looked like they didn't have the same energy and focus that the Pelicans came out with, getting outworked and out-hustled and, like, second-chance points and 50-50 balls. You know, as Daryl Morey said, there is a giant Ben Simmons-sized hole in this roster. Obviously, he was a huge part of their defensive effort around the perimeter, or just the team in general. He was implored in the transition defense, and really helps them in a myriad of ways. So what do you think it is about these games where they just don't quite seem to be
at the level as the opposing team. Sure, you got all these guys who don't normally get playing time, you know, playing with house money, as they say, who are really, you know, energetic and whatnot. But the Pelicans were coming off a back-to-back, I mean, or playing the second game of a back-to-back, and the Sixers here at home just didn't quite have that oomph.
Indeed, I think there were a couple of plays that epitomized that with Jose Alvarado, the Pelicans generously listed at 6 foot starting point guard for this
great
game.
Great story, by the way, for him.
Mm-hmm. Namesake of a certain unpredictable Phillies reliever, but he came up from behind on Tyrese Maxey this one play, and the whole arena was almost shouting at Maxey, like, he's coming up behind you.
Yeah, watch your back, watch your back.
None of the Sixers on the floor told him that because he swiped the ball. And then later in the first half, Embiid and Alvarado had a jump ball. Of course, Embiid won it because he's, you know, 14 inches taller or whatever, but the Pelicans came out with possession, threw the ball down the floor, and Hernan Gomez gets it and one layup. So two plays that no doubt signify a lack of intensity, a lack of hustle, lack of some of those just effort-based intangibles. And I think the bottom line for the Sixers is they're not a good enough team to get away with being deficient in those qualities. And, you know, one aspect of that last night is, okay, the Sixers were more sloppy than usual in the first half. I think had 8 or 9 turnovers. And this is just not a team that forces many turnovers without Ben Simmons. Like, they're middle of the pack as opposed to last year, being third in defensive turnover percentage per cleaning the glass. So that's just an indication that if the Sixers are sloppy, then they're going to be conceding a lot of possessions to the other team. You know, if the effort's not there and their rebounding is even worse than usual, you know, that's going to be a further possession disparity. So it's something where the team just does not have a huge margin of error these days. And that's even the case against like shorthanded sub 500 opponents. So credit to them for turning it around. But I think just they can't afford to not start games fully locked in. That's just the reality of what this team is.
Yeah. A Lakers squad that is getting healthier with the return of Anthony Davis will be a test for the Sixers team. Although the Lakers don't have the stellar record to reflect, you know, what this roster looks like. I mean, currently the Lakers sit at 8th in the Western Conference at 24 up and 24 down. But the feather in the Sixers cap right now seems to be, hopefully Tobias Harris can carry over his great play from this game against the Pelicans into that game Thursday against the Lakers. 39 minutes, the guy hit all three of his three-pointers, all four of his free throws. He goes 13 of 19, 11 boards, and 33 points. I mean, you can't expect him to contribute that on a regular basis by any means. He's more of a 20-point-per-game scorer, if a notch below that this season. But here in this game, he seemed to have it going on and was – everything the Sixers needed to go with Embiid, where the rest of the roster didn't quite have that momentum. I think Tyrese Maxey got into double figures late in the second half. Furkan Korkmaz only had 13 points. What did you see from Tobias? And we'll go through his numbers this month as well, which may surprise you. But what did you see from Tobias that last night that might have turned your head?
I think first and foremost, it was one of those games where obviously he had advantageous matchups and he went about exploiting those in the right way. So as opposed to pounding the ball and trying to back down smaller defenders time after time, he saw opportunities to drive downhill and to score easy points inside and around the paint, in addition to taking the threes that were open and, as you said, knocking down all of them. Doc Rivers, of course, as is his default with Harris, pointed to him making quicker decisions and then expanded on exactly what he means by that with, I thought, a great quote that was there's only one ball stopper on this team, right? And of course, that's Joel Embiid. So essentially Harris, though the Sixers need him to be the number two scorer, you know, on this current roster, they don't need him to be the number two ball stopper because, you know, when he doesn't, you know, make quick, you know, decisive moves, it's easier for defenders to get into his body, Rivers said, and he's just a less efficient, less effective overall player. So this was the sort of player the Sixers hope to see moving forward. And the overall trend is good, if not, you know, overwhelmingly encouraging. But, you know, the past four or five games, he's generally played the way the Sixers want him to play and generally put up good numbers. So that was nice here. And I think in this particular game, it was nice to see that, you know, before Embiid checked back in for the final stint, Harris actually ensured the Sixers were up by two, as opposed to Embiid needing to save the entire day. He did well alongside some second unit guys at playing aggressively without playing slowly, which again is always going to be a key for him on this team.
So yeah, I mean, when you look at his monthly numbers, Noah, there have been a dozen games this month. He's averaging 18.9 points per, about 7 rebounds, around 4 assists, and 1.5 turnovers, shooting 50% from the field with 41% from three and 86% from the free throw line. Do you feel like the eye test really reflects those numbers? Do you feel like he's contributing in the way that those numbers might say that he is?
I think it seems about right. I think as far as like process and style, last night was certainly his best in recent memory, just at making the most of his physical advantages and doing it in a way that's not deliberate and that is part of the natural flow of the Sixers offense, I think. But I think as we noted, he was good in the Spurs game too, and that was another game where the Sixers might not pull it out if Tobias Harris doesn't play well. So I think that seems about right. I think for him it's less about just the pure points, and it's more about how efficiently he's doing that and the ways that he's getting that done. The assist to turnover numbers you pointed to, I think that's encouraging just as far as his decision-making, and generally when defenses are shading help in his direction, you know, when he's playing with these bench-heavy units, he seems to be doing a little better as of late, just making the smart, simple play. So I think he's trending a little bit in the right direction. Again, not trending in the level of, wow, he's, you know, looking like the all-star-ish player he was last year, but was good last night and has been good as of late.
I mentioned who was out: Danny Green, Seth Curry, Shake Milton, but it was the return of Matisse Thybulle with his heavily taped right shoulder. Matisse, you know, right into the starting lineup, 33 minutes of action, and he doesn't quite have the impact that you would hope that he would have. But, you know, just seeing him back and having him as a rotation piece was really important for the Sixers. Alexander Walker poured in 31 points, I believe. Matisse, you know, guarding him most of the night. It was good to see him back out there. Were you surprised, which we've seen in the past, when Tyrese Maxey came back from COVID, that Doc had him in for that amount of time and injected him right into the starting lineup, where he had Charlie Brown in that role and maybe could have worked Matisse in a bit slower?
I was not surprised about him starting. That seems to be Rivers' preference in these spots, just throw the guy back into the fire and see exactly what he has. I do think it's interesting that he seems to manage these situations more by gut feel than you might expect, just given the prevalence of sports science these days.
Right. And analytics.
I imagine if this was Joel Embiid, maybe the Sixers would have been a little more cautious, although Embiid also played a lot, that double overtime game against the Timberwolves coming back from COVID. So Yeah, Rivers figures the best way to acclimate someone is to test their cardio and to give them a difficult night physically. And Dybul certainly had that. Rivers admitted, you know, the first half, you clearly saw some rust and you didn't see the best version of Matisse Dybul. And then he flashed some of the renowned defensive rules in the second half.
And that reverse dunk.
Had a block and a steal, I think, in quick succession early in the third. Looked a little more just comfortable, I think, offensively with some of the cuts, even if outside of the dunk they weren't actually resulting in points. So just overall makes things a lot easier rotation-wise for the Sixers that they've got Thibault back. And you figure soon enough he'll look like the Matisse Thibault we know, even if that wasn't the case, you know, in game one back on the floor.
Here's a thought that is floating out there in Sixers fandom. When we see the prowess and the execution and just the efficiency and Joel Embiid's cardio and the way he's looks to be in such great shape this season, there are people who feel like the load management and slowly working Embiid into extended minutes and things like that from the past years because of the cautiousness with injuries was a mistake, because he never quite got into that game shape that he has been showing now. And, you know, just going from his word, he often has said that he feels fine. You know, the foot isn't bothering, the knee, the hand, what have you. Do you feel like there's any validity to that, that maybe some of that low management from past seasons and not letting him play, you know, back-to-backs or play as often affected his cardio in a way that it isn't being affected this year because those restrictions aren't there?
I don't really think so, in large part because, as Embiid would tell you, a lot of this is on him. Like, he was the one who had to get in better shape so that he was able to play a lot of minutes and not be tired in the fourth quarter and stack a bunch of games in a row. He just wasn't in good enough shape in past seasons for that to be feasible. Mm-hmm. I think overall the Sixers have been right to exercise caution with him. And there are times they could have been more cautious. You remember the year that he played in the All-Star game and then comes back from that injury, dealing with a knee issue that sidelined him and that continued to bother him up through the playoffs. So
slightly torn meniscus, I think that was.
I'm not sure what it was classified as. I want to say tendonitis. Okay. I don't think he had a meniscus tear or anything, but it did keep him out, I believe, the first like 8 games after the All-Star break. And then even in the playoffs against Brooklyn and Toronto for some of these games, he was listed, you know, on the injury report.
He missed
one of those first round games against Brooklyn. Anyway, that's an instance where you could argue the Sixers should have load managed him more or should have been a little more cautious in their approach. So I think it's on Embiid's shoulders. And I think now the question is, when's he going to get a day off? Because he's playing so many games in a row.
Right. And
he did acknowledge last night that he's been feeling a little tired and it's been taking him a little while to sort of get into his groove in games. So I certainly don't think load management as significant as in past years will be necessary, but I imagine one of these days he will get a well-earned night of rest.
It's tough to sit him when he's so hot though. He's just so on point right now. It's tough to just sit him and for the Sixers as a team to be able to float what they have without him. So that'll be really interesting to see how that plays out. A game like the Pelicans where they're down four starters would be an optimal time to do that. But once again, Embiid pouring it on against them. We're going to take a time out here and let you stew on some of that. But we'll come back and talk a bit about this James Harden situation as it relates to the 76ers. We'll be right back here on the Sixers Talk Podcast. Make your move in 2022. A Wilmington University education can take you where you want to go. Spring classes start January 10th. Apply today at wilmu.edu.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte clear liners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you could pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Well, no, we don't have to spend a ton of time on this, but as it relates to James Harden, supposedly there is, you know, a fly in the ointment, as they say, in Brooklyn, where he's reportedly not feeling thrilled about playing or living in Brooklyn. He has an option to opt out of his current deal at the end of this season, which, according to those reports from The Athletic and ESPN, that there is a chance he could still end up back in Brooklyn if he does opt out and comes to a new terms on a new deal. But once again, the window for the Sixers to maybe step in and bring James Harden to Philadelphia is there if he does opt out. Or there's also, you know, the sign and trade possibility where the Simmons is sent to Brooklyn or Tobias Harris is sent to Brooklyn or some reasonable facsimile thereof, and that brings James Harden to Philadelphia. Would you be comfortable waiting that long on a Simmons trade if you felt, you know, there was some validity to bringing Harden here? And is Harden, you think, the apple of the Sixers' eye?
I think we know Daryl Morey likes James Harden a lot, and there's just been so much smoke here.
Right.
Is every single tidbit of speculation worth blowing up into a huge deal? No, but
hey, that's part of the reason why it's worth talking about every Sixers Talk podcast.
Exactly. But I think, yeah, the big picture of it's uncertain whether James Harden is going to stay with the Nets beyond this season, and the Sixers like James Harden, and it's not difficult to envision him being a heck of a 1-2 pairing with Joel Embiid. All that's interesting, and all that probably is worth giving consideration to. I think with Harden, the risk would be significant, but that's always the case with a big money player. And I think, as we've maybe touched on once or twice before, part of what's fascinating to me is just the question of how James Harden's game will age. I think, in theory, his savviness and the fact that he doesn't rely much on his athleticism will be assets. But, hey, like, 33-year-old player, it's rare that those guys are elite in the NBA. I guess it's maybe becoming a little more common if you want to read into, like, Steph Curry's success, or you really want to hyperanalyze, you know, individual examples. But you think of the average NBA player's career arc, and it sure starts going down around 32, 33 years old. But Joel Embiid is indisputably in his prime, and he would absolutely be getting a heck of a second star in James Harden if the Sixers manage to pull that off. For me, I just find it hard to see, like, if Brooklyn wins the title this season, that James Harden wouldn't want to stay on that team, even if, you know, the reporting is true that he doesn't love the living arrangements or the weather or whatever in Brooklyn. Like, he's on a championship team. I imagine you want to stay on a championship team. But certainly there will be a lot of speculation moving forward about his mindset and his desires for the future. I think each player, of course, has their own preferences, but you just take generic NBA player and ask, do you want to play with Joel Embiid? The answer is probably going to be yes. And I think that is one reason that all of this buzz, which does seem to be recently escalating, is worth paying attention to.
And, of course, we have the anomaly of all anomalies when it comes to age. LeBron James coming into South Philly on Thursday. 37-year-old playing some of his best basketball, trying to lead this Lakers team to a title. I think the other question, which I posed to you, was, is the Simmons for Harden trade, is that amicable for you? Do you feel like that's a trade that where the Sixers win? Of course, you know, there's the what James Harden brings as a player, but I think the age thing just really all gives me a little bit of pause, because you got a 25-year-old three-time All-Star that you're trading for a 33-year-old player. Same goes for like Damian Lillard. Like, these are guys over 30, where, you know, Simmons is a guy who you could see playing at least another 10 seasons. You know, maybe he has that longevity because of, you know, the way his style of play is, like a LeBron James, where he can push it past 35 years old. But a guy like Simmons for someone who's 30 plus just kind of gives me a little bit of pause, is a little, you know, a little bit upsetting for me. But where are you at on that?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you just in that I think the immediate reaction of if the Sixers land James Harden, fans are right to be ecstatic about that. That's fair, but then I think the
practicality of it, right?
Yeah, the second reaction of, geez, there's so much risk here, and it's not a sure thing. I think that's also really fair and really valid. And the Harden stuff is complicated, of course, in part because of his contract situation. Like, this is not the typical sign and trade sort of deal. You know, you think of the Jimmy Butler, Josh Richardson sign and trade. You know, it's not typical with a sign and trade that, you know, you have to give a lot up. And obviously Ben Simmons, I think it's fair to classify him as a lot. But then again, that's a scenario down the road where the Sixers have held on to Simmons for a year and would sure like to move on from him at some point. So I think there's a lot of complexity to analyzing like how the Sixers would do in that deal. And as with all of this, it's hard to know for sure. And a lot of it just boils down to how long is James Harden going to be a really good player for? And I think he's going to be good for quite a while, as long as he's healthy, is my gut feel. But it's really hard to tell. To your question of does the Harden possibility like justify waiting for the Sixers, I think you do again have to have knowledge of exactly what's on the table for the Sixers pre-deadline. But right. It sure doesn't seem like a star is, and James Harden is a star. So I think it's defensible logic that waiting it out and putting your chips into the Harden basket makes some sense.
Well, we're what, almost 15 days now, if we start from today until the deadline comes February 10th. So, hey, we'll see how this plays out, because the Sixers hopefully will be getting healthier here as this week in the homestand progresses, as Shake Milton, Danny Green, and Seth Curry can get back into the lineup. And then pushing toward the trade deadline, you'll see where the pieces would fit that they could acquire if they do decide to make a move. But Joel Embiid is doing his part, and U.S. Sixers fans are doing yours and being passionate, opinionated, and intense about this team that so many of us love and enjoy so much. Hey, for Noah Levick and Ben Berry, I'm Danny Pommels. Thanks for listening to the Sixers Talk podcast, brought to you by Wilmington University, WilmU Works. We'll see you next time.